Hey y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Skill Set. Today I'm super excited to help you guys add another storytelling skill to your skill set. And today we're talking about dermatology, and who better to talk us through the communication skills you need in that first derm consult than Dr. Jeff Tinsley, or you might know him better on Instagram as Derm Dr. Jeff. Now, Jeff has a pretty interesting story in that he has also spent some time in general practice before launching into his dermatology residency. But as he will tell us, he has experienced different areas of veterinary medicine along the way. But Jeff is just an incredible, incredible veterinarian to talk to about this because beyond dermatology, his biggest passions are connecting with clients, outstanding medical care, and being an advocate for his patients. So who better to talk to us about this? So let's launch into this episode, and I'll start by saying, hey, Jeff, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am super excited to have you on the show today, partly because of your massive knowledge of dermatology, but also just the kind of interest that you have in educating the next generation of veterinarians, which, as we know, during this time of COVID is so hard to really kind of get down into the nitty-gritty with everything being over video and not getting as much on hands-on clinic time. So thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat to students about this. I'm super excited to kind of dive into the storytelling skills that they need when they're talking about dermatology, because as we kind of mentioned before, as we were talking, that school is really good at giving us the textbook about what dermatology is, but translating that into something that clients understand takes a whole nother set of skills, which is what we will dive into today. But before I get too excited and move forward too fast, I'll give you a couple minutes to just kind of talk about who you are, where your interest in dermatology came from, and where they can find you on the social media platforms.
Yeah. So before I forget, my Instagram is at Derm, DermDogTor, Jeff, JEFF, on Instagram, if you want to follow my shenanigans. As far as how I got into Derm, it's a little bit interesting, but I'll give you the short version. So I graduated in 2017 from Tuskegee University. I thought I was going to do surgery, was actually really gunning for it at that time, decided to do a rotating internship and moved to San Antonio, Texas, where I worked at a Blue Pearl. I got really burnt out from my rotating internship, and was working really hard, decided to go into general practice just as a different change of pace, and started getting really interested in my derm cases, went to lots of derm CEs. I ended up going to the National Derm Conference, where I met my current mentor, who, you know, accepted me as a specialty intern for a year. And now I am in the first year of my residency.
Such an interesting story of how you got from one place to the next, because you went from surgery to derm. Uh-huh. So that's really awesome. Yes. I know probably a lot of people think that they're going to go down one area of vet med, but the beauty of this profession is that you can just change dramatically. So in your first year of residency as a dermatologist, huge, exciting area to be in. I'm like a first year graduate. There we go. I'm not in vet school anymore, guys, even though I feel like it sometimes. But I am a first year veterinarian. I have so much to learn when it comes to dermatology. So in breaking down what we're going to talk about today, we're going to use all of Jeff's amazing derm knowledge and skills and storytelling to help you guys talk about your first real allergy case that comes through the door. So you ready for this, Jeff?
I'm ready.
All right. So let's jump into this. So you have shown up at work, and on the first appointment that you have on your list is a one-year-old, adorable, bouncy female spayed Labrador who the owners tell you just is scratching at her ears incessantly. They can barely stop. And she has this bright red rash on her underbelly, and they have no idea why it is happening. And they just have come to you at the end of their rope. What are the kind of things that you're thinking about even before you have stepped foot into that consult room?
For derm, history is so important. So just even you telling me that, is immediately I'm thinking, you know, the first 9 out of 10 things are probably allergic disease. And then, you know, taking it from there, I would say I kind of had a couple of steps or a couple of thoughts are, is this patient on good parasite control, or recovering for fleas and potentially itchy mites like scabies? And is it infected? So checking skin cytology and ear cytology to look for that and treat appropriately. And does this patient need some anti-itch control? So what things has it tried in the past? What thing, you know, if it's brand new and the door is wide open, then that's great. You know, treat for infection and give it some appropriate flea tick control, give it some appropriate anti-itch control. And it's also really important to me to ask about its history of itch in the past. So sometimes owners don't remember if, unless you start probing them a little bit more and you say, hey, did this happen last spring or last fall? Has this been happening year round? So all of those things I think are extremely important.
So in asking that, you've just brought up a big point. You said, has this happened before? And of course, you've already looked through the history, but the owner's like, yes, I was here like 2 months ago for the exact same thing. And you look in the history and it says, oh yeah, treated with Claro for their ears. And they gave them some systemic antibiotics. And then it said recheck in 3 to 4 weeks. And did they come back? No. So,
of course not.
Of course, right? I feel like you go over the treatment and then any recommendation to come back is just whoosh right over their heads. They forget about it. So now you have this general history, you have some differentials going through your head. And of course, this is COVID time. So you don't have the client in the room for you to point to the dog's belly and be like, oh, look, a pustule, or look in the ears and be like, see, the ears are really red and inflamed. So now you have picked up the phone, you've maybe come up with a bit of a estimate for the owner on their invoice, but now you have to talk the owner into letting you run some diagnostics, which the questions are then, what are the diagnostics you want to run, and how do you talk to the owner about these?
Yeah, so how I would approach it, especially being on the phone, it does make things a little bit harder because I think you lose those verbal cues for understanding and seeing if the owner's nodding their head, or you lose the nonverbal cues. So what's really been helpful to me is I try really hard when I'm explaining things to give them just the information they need and then check in frequently. So when I'm explaining things, I will say, I have a lot of information for you. Please feel free to ask questions. I am going to make you a short-term and long-term plan. I think we need to put out the fire today, get your baby comfortable, but I also want to make sure you have a long-term plan. And so I want you to understand, I'm mostly worried for this case specifically, I'm mostly worried about allergies. I think we need to find out what the most likely underlying allergy is. And we've got a couple of things we need to do to get there. It's very important that we start off with some basic diagnostics. Even if they've been done before, cytologies are extremely important because I need to see if we're infected today. I want to see the progress. So maybe you check cytologies and you do good samples and it's not really infected. I'm not going to reach for antibiotics necessarily. Maybe it's not that bad and you can use, you know, topical therapies, a medicated shampoo, things like that. And maybe the infection is completely different from what's been noted before. So that's super, super important, is to recheck those cytologies, see where things are, and then check in with your client frequently and, you know, let them know where you're at, where your head's at, and try to keep it brief. I know that's tough because derm is all about talking, but also checking in a lot. I ask constantly over the phone, does that make sense? Do you understand the plan? And then if you have time, I try to send them home with like a little paragraph or, you know, a discharge of some sort if you can.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of information. So let's break that down a bit more in the specifics for this conversation. So we decided that we want to do cytology for this itchy dog, but you talk to the owner and they're like, they did cytology last time and they just gave me some medications. Why can't I have that same one again? What is your response?
Yeah, I'm going to say, I actually dealt with this earlier today. I had an owner that said, my vet's already done all that. Why are you running these cytologies? And I said, I have to know if they're infected today. So under the microscope in-house, I can see if there's cocci, rods, or yeast. If the infection has changed, and it can absolutely change in a couple of weeks, skin's notorious for that. If they are not infected today, then I may not need to reach for oral antibiotics or antifungals. If it's not that bad, again, I can use maybe some topicals. Also, if they've had antibiotics for me in the past 6 months, I generally will recommend culturing to make sure that they have not gotten something resistant. So I think most doctors are really, really good about that first line treatment. I usually use a cephalosporin, but if it's been done well and done long enough for me, 3 to 4 weeks, and you know, again, they didn't come back for their recheck, I want to make sure this is not something resistant. So step one, we have to recheck cytologies. If they don't want to, then I will throw lots of topicals and frequent bathing at the dog.
Mm-hmm. And then on the topic of antibiotics and the length of treatment, this is something where I've heard a little bit of conflicting information, so maybe you can help clear up the air. If we have a superficial pyoderma and we're treating with antibiotics, the length of treatment should be fill in the blank.
My answer is almost always 4 weeks. That being said, I think three to four weeks is appropriate. But whenever you're deciding on how long to use them, I think it's most important that you recheck cytology when you're planning to stop them. So if ideally 1 to 2 weeks past a clinical resolution is what you'll see out of a book. So I think 4 weeks, if you're not sure, or you're really confident this is an infection and you've done your cytology and you see them there, I think 4 weeks knocks out more than most infections that are not resistant.
Thank you. That helps clear up a lot of things, because in some places they're like, oh, you just need 2 weeks. And it's like, no, it's 2 weeks past resolution. But it's like, what does that actually mean then? So I think it's important, like you said, just to have the clients come back for that recheck, which that is like the stickiest situation, is like you can tell them you need to come back for a recheck. You need to, like, this is why. But have you found any phrasing or, like, I don't know, like text messages or postcards or anything, smoke signals, that reminds an owner that they actually do need to come back and increases the likelihood that they will?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I just kind of lay everything out. And the ones who come back, the owners who really are able to and dedicated to the skin, they're going to come back. You see zillions of cases in general practice. I remember. So you don't have time, and I wouldn't focus on spending your energy on the owners who are not giving you the same energy back. So the ones that want to come back are going to come back. You know, my little elevator speeches, I worry about resistance if we don't recheck this infection to make sure it's completely gone. And allergies are forever, so if your pet does have allergies, they will flare again. I expect them to get infected again. So you give them the tools, you give them the knowledge. I love a handout, so you can send them home with allergy handouts. When I was in general practice, I literally had classic handouts for every common disease that I could think of, and I would grab them and highlight what I want them to remember. So, you know, I read them and literally recite them to the owner and say, hey, I've only got 5 minutes to talk about this. Here's this handout that has really good info. Call me if you have questions. But, you know, really important that you recheck if we want to try to get this, you know, under control long term.
Mm-hmm. So for this case, then, we've basically gotten on the phone. We've talked to the owner. We said we want to do cytology. The owner's on board of being like, okay, fine, I understand. You need to find out what's happening today. Go ahead, do the cytology. And it comes back with a mild superficial pyoderma. So like we've discussed, you put them on your antibiotics, and you, at that point, though, you shouldn't just send them on their way. There's kind of a bigger conversation that needs to happen. And you've already touched on it multiple times. But in talking about allergies, this isn't just a one-stop shop. It's going to come back. It's going to come back differently, potentially the next time. So how do you break down allergies to owners, especially when it's probably the first time they've heard this over the phone.
Yeah, I usually say allergies are kind of like a pie chart. So the most common allergies that I run into are flea, environmental, and food allergies. And then I discuss with them what makes the most sense to me for that individual case. So if it's seasonal, atopy is extremely likely. If you roll the dice, I'll say 80% of patients who have allergies on, you know, on your radar, they are probably atopic, so environmentally allergic. What I care about is focusing on which allergy is their primary condition causing them the most itch and discomfort. So I say, hey, you're on great flea control now. Let's say we check that box. We've checked off infection. We have a plan for that. If they are non-seasonal or, you know, itchy all year round, then I'm going to recommend a food trial. If they're predominantly seasonal, you know, the owner says, you know, they're perfect in winter, then I'm probably just going to reach for, you know, the classic things that you have in clinic for anti-itch. So your Oclacetinib, Locuvetmap, Apoquel, and Cytopoint. I think a short course of steroids is very appropriate if they're super inflamed. I'll usually use one of those for a couple of weeks and recheck and see how they're doing. So again, I'll remind my owner, this is forever. This is only symptomatic treatment. So these are all Band-Aids. Everything is a Band-Aid unless they're, you know, potentially willing to allergy tests and start immunotherapy, which frankly is almost always done in specialty practice. So from a GP standpoint, I just try to plant the seed. If it's the first time, I'll plant the seed that this is going to be forever. And if there's time to explain a little bit more, my goal really is just to let them know we need some sort of long-term management. And often that's symptomatic in the beginning. So sometimes I'll just give them the tools I need to put out the fire, let them know that's going to be long-term, we need to discuss more, and then go into more detail about the long-term management options at recheck.
Okay. And so they understand, okay, allergies, it's forever, it's something I have to deal with. But then they ask, so why is she getting an infection on her skin if it's allergies? How do you describe that?
That's an excellent question. So I like to think of allergies like brick and mortar. So my bricks being the skin cells, the mortar is all of my nutrients, water, everything in between that keeps the skin barrier nice and strong. Allergies are a genetic predisposition to break up that skin barrier. And it's unlike a normal dog, an abnormal dog will itch at normal skin due to a genetic predisposition for their body to experience, let's say pollens, for example, super common, and overreact and disrupt that skin barrier. So when that happens, there's lots of normal bacteria and microbes on the skin that cause no problems for a non-allergic dog that go crazy when the skin barrier is destroyed and disrupted in an allergy dog. So some of those infections are just overgrowth, extreme overgrowth, and opportunistic infections from their allergies.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way of describing it. I've never heard of it as like the brick and mortar. I really like that though. It's a really good visualization for the clients because that way they're able to think about, oh, the skin, like it's just not working correctly. Like, for me at school, I was taught the itch scratch cycle. And so I usually try and launch into something where it's like the skin barrier doesn't work right. But the better way to say that would be like it's brick and mortar and the mortar is not holding the bricks together correctly. That you're getting these secondary infections, which makes them itchier. So then they scratch more and then they do more damage to themselves. And it just keeps going unless you stop that cycle somehow and then deal with the root cause, which back at the beginning of the conversation, we told the client we need to deal with today's firefight. We need to make the pet feel better. And then we have to launch into the long-term management of this pet. So now we've answered a lot of different questions for this client. We've given them some handouts and highlighted some things for them. But how do we then talk about the long-term management of allergies? This is a one-year-old dog. What are the kind of things that you're going to present to the owner today?
Yeah. So if this happens to be a non-seasonal dog, I'll go into a deep dive about a food trial. So right now, the only accurate way to tell if a dog is food allergic is to do an 8 to 12 week food trial on a prescription diet. There is no other test, no blood test, no saliva test, no hair tests. I've seen all of them. They just are not repeatable and accurate yet. So doing a strict food trial on a prescription diet is really, really important if they're at all seeming non-seasonal, or if you're not sure because the history is a little bit confusing. Maybe they were infected in winter. We don't really know. I'll start with a food trial if there's any hint in my mind that's on my radar. If, let's say, we've done our food trial, we've done an excellent job, we feel like we did a prescription diet, we followed all the rules, and you re-challenge that old food to make sure that they're flaring, which is also important. Otherwise, season change can make things a little bit confusing. Let's say you've done it great. Now you're left with ADAP, which is a diagnosis of exclusion, your classic environmental allergies. For me, I give my clients kind of two main categories. You treat symptomatically forever, which can be Apoquil, maybe periodic Cytopoint, and frequent bathing, I think, is super helpful. Don't forget your topicals. First of all, I'd say, like, if that's keeping them comfortable, then great. Maybe that's all they have to do, but I would tell them they will probably have to do this forever. So they need to know that. And that's okay. Those are really safe medications. If they want to try to, use less medications potentially, then honestly, the best thing you can offer them is, if they're interested in referral and allergy testing, I would start that dog on immunotherapy. And I'm happy to go into more details if you're interested.
No, immunotherapy is definitely a bit of a hot topic right now, especially with NGP having so many different serum tests that we can run. And That's always a question for myself, as I had to do a ton of research into the one that my clinic was recommending. And thankfully, we've been seeing amazing results with it thus far. But a lot of the kicker for these clients are, you're like, oh yeah, this is the kind of testing that we have. It's not perfect. And what really frustrates me about them is, like, every single one of these testing companies has a food allergy panel on it. And I'm just like, no, it doesn't work. But the clients are just, they're drawn into that. And they're like, oh, I can find out what the sensitivity is. And I'm like, not really.
But I tell them to completely ignore it. And I'm really, at this point, really strict about it, because if you do it, they will take it as the gospel, regardless of what you tell them. So I tell my clients, nope, it's a complete waste of your money, unfortunately, because the test results, they're not repeatable and they're not accurate yet. And I'll be the first person in line when they're accurate. But I say, just ignore them. Don't do it.
I know, I fought tooth and nail with one client. She's like, but the food allergy panel. And I was like, fine, because she had sent her dog to training, and it was on the hydrolyzed diet. And she and the trainer were convinced that the food was making the dog crazy. So...
okay, I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, I told her that, and I was like, if the research comes through and tells me different, then fine, whatever, but... today, that is not something that I am aware of. And she was just dead set on the food sensitivity panel, which, that's always a really hard one. That is a new grad, is you're trying to figure out, okay, am I actually wrong about this? Because I'm just a new grad, still trying to figure it out. So what are kind of sources that people like myself or just new grads can go to when they are kind of faced with these clients that are just like dead set on, this is what is wrong with my dog, you can't tell me differently?
Yeah. I mean, I would say the most classic and easiest thing that you could do is literally... I mean, if they want to see the book, they're happy to see it. They don't, probably. You could copy paste the page out of the book. I don't know of a legitimate resource that would tell you anything different. I've seen lots of great handouts. So I think Veterinary Partner has a really great handout, that website. I literally just Google it and highlight off of that. I think there's lots of university websites that have excellent explanations of food allergy. So again, for me, I'm not going to spend all my energy on the client who's really dead set about it. I'm going to say, I don't think this is accurate. If you want to do a food trial, this is how to do it appropriately. And this is what I would recommend. And everybody's not going to take your recommendation. So the best advice I can say is, here's your resources. Here's a great handout. If you want to do what you want to do, by all means. And if your pet gets better doing what they want to do from a client standpoint, then great. We've still achieved our goal, but we have not truly ruled out food if we haven't done a food allergy. The tests are not good.
I think you forgot one important resource, your local dermatologist that you can go and call.
Yes, please call me.
Like you.
Call me, text me, email me. I'm here and I will tell them the exact same thing.
I think a lot for myself, at least, I always forget that I have awesome people that I can reach out to. Like I have the phone number for the oncologist, the dermatologist, the cardiologist. Some of them are getting to know me by name at this point because I'm reaching out to them so often. But as a new grad, you forget that it's not just Vin that you have. It's not just the veterinarians in your practice. It's not just your mentor. But you can call the referral hospitals in the area and be like, help, I'm lost. I have no idea what to do. Or I think I know what I need to do, but the client's fighting me on it. Like, what are the kind of tips, tricks, or just information that I can add? Those are awesome resources to have at this time, especially when all you can do is call and email people. You can't go visit their practice, which I think even in normal times people would just still call you to get references or get recommendations. But that has been a big thing for myself as a new grad to learn and really accept and just kind of be like, okay, I've run out of resources. Vin isn't telling me anything else. All the other vets are super busy today. So I've literally just gone on and checked the local dermatologist and been like, hey, do you have 5 minutes? And they're usually pretty awesome about either emailing back or calling back, even if it's in the middle of their lunch period, whatever small amount of lunch they do get. But that's,
I do.
You do actually get a lunch. That's nice. I did not have a lunch today, but that's always a good resource for people to think about. So going back to our case, then, I feel like we've covered a lot of things that are going to happen. So, and of course it's remembering you have 30 minutes, maybe. Some people only have 15 minutes to go through the majority of this. So I think, like you said, having those handouts to give to clients and making sure that you kind of hit the big topics when you're talking about it. It's like, okay, so your dog came in and today the firefight that we're doing is the itchiness, the crazy itchiness and the superficial pyoderma. Okay, awesome. Here's some antibiotics. Here's some topicals so that we can repair the skin barrier, take away the itch, and try and get us back to a baseline. But then it's remembering, okay, the next part of this conversation is the long term. It's allergies, most likely. It's going to be a lifelong thing. Right. So then talking about possibilities for long-term management, and maybe you can correct me on this, but a lot of times I talk about being like, oh, this could really be allergies. This is the itch-scratch cycle. But knowing that I've probably filled this owner's head, half of what I've said is literally fallen onto the floor at this point, and saying, this is what we're going to deal with today. I really want to see you back in 3 to 4 weeks so that we can recheck this, because if this is not getting better or if this comes back, I want to revisit the topic of allergies. And usually they're like, oh, okay. And you can kind of hear in their head, they're like, I get it. I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. But I don't fully understand it yet, which then it's like, okay, I'm going to end up having this conversation probably 2 or 3 more times with this client before it really starts to sink in. And is that something that you're finding as well? It's not just me as a new grad trying to explain everything.
I would say 1,000%. I get the same issues. And I think it just comes down to just like, you know, us in any other situation, you just need to hear things more than once sometimes, regardless of how good I think I am at explaining allergies, even though I do it every single day. It's probably like half my practice. And even, you know, from the specialist side of things, I do type out formal discharges. It's about a 1-page sheet for every single one of my cases, and they will go home. and promptly call me about number three on the discharge. I do like 1, 2, 3, 4. And they're like, I have no idea what you said about this. And I'm like, no worries. I will tell you again. It's my job and it's fine. It happens all the time. I think there's no way around it other than explaining the best you can. I think handouts are great. Another two tips I can offer would be from a general practice standpoint, and you know, sometimes for me as well, if you can't explain everything, you can't. So don't beat yourself up about it, but let the owner know, you know, allude to what you need to talk about next time, put a note to yourself in the record for next time. You know, we're putting out the fire today, discussed briefly food trial, long-term therapy goals. That's okay. And I leave myself notes all the time, things like that. So try to focus on and ask them, you know, is my pet or is your pet comfortable today? What are your goals? So maybe you're just trying to put out every fire on the dog and give them everything. Sometimes they're not as concerned and they want to just focus on the itch, and that's okay. And they know it's going to come back, and you told them, you've done your job. So you have to remember what, you know, your long-term goals need to align with their long-term goal. Just because you want everything for this pet doesn't mean that they're going to want to do everything, and that's fine. So sometimes you have to reschedule, recheck. In GP, I also had those days where like you've seen the appointment for what it came in for, maybe it came in for vaccines, your whole appointment's gone, you have 5 minutes left, and they say, he's been licking every May forever. And I just want to know what that is. You don't have time to go into a detailed allergy talk, so you give them the basics. I'm worried about allergies. Here's some anti-flea medication. Maybe here's a topical. You know, maybe here's an antibiotic if it's indicated, and they got to go. And that's okay. Like, please come back for your recheck. And that's really, really having designated time for a skin recheck, I think, is super helpful.
You hit on such a big thing. The number of times that happens where I'm literally like ready to give the vaccines and then the owner's like, oh yeah, by the way, there's like this bleeding mass, yep, or something like from how, like a lick granuloma or something. And I'm like, okay, so we're not giving vaccines today anymore. Mm-hmm. My whole plan just went out the window. Thank you very much. But
sure.
Oh gosh, trying to put it into such a small amount of time, which was so hard for me in the beginning as a new grad, which still is, but kind of prioritizing. And like you said, trying to align your goals with what the owner is worried about and putting it into a way that they understand. Like with the itch scale, it's like, okay, is on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is you cannot distract them worth anything from, sure, the itch. What is your dog today? And that can help the owner be like, well, today it's this, but last week it was that, and the week before that it was this. And so you can kind of like build into it and be like, oh, I kind of understand what's happening now. But the other big thing which you touched on was having rechecks for it. And for at my practice, at least, what I like to do is either myself or my assistant will put a call back in for either the day or 2 days later to be like, hey,
yeah,
Dr. McCauley talked to you about some allergies and some anti-itch. Like, how are things going? And usually at that, mm-hmm, point, they're not thinking about the fecal sample and the vaccine reactions that you talked about during the appointment. And they're like, oh, yeah, that medication that's still sitting in the bag? Yeah, I remember that stuff. And they're like, well, how about you give it? Or maybe it's working or not. And then that point, then either myself or the nurse who does the callback can say, you know what? Maybe Dr. McCauley or Dr. Tinsley should see you again. And that way it can get their brain going to be like, yeah, you know what, let's schedule a recheck. So
yeah,
that's another huge thing that I have had to learn to kind of think about during the appointment, and so that afterwards, while I'm typing up my notes of things that I chatted about, things I want to go over again, I can put that call back in for like maybe it's 2 weeks later when right, that's when I should check back in to be like, you know what, let's check that skin in another week or two when, because I put you on antibiotics, kind of thing. So giving the space, right, for the client to think has been helpful, because it's also space for myself to think. But
sure, absolutely. And I'll say, look, one other thing that's super helpful for me, I started this in general practice and I brought it with me, is I've got a running Google Doc of my personal words. So like one or two sentences about either, you know, how to treat or recommendations for future skin tests, or how to deal with a food allergy, or just little blurbs to myself, how to treat ears, like the classic thing that I see every day. And I'll copy paste that into the record. And depending on your practice, some practices have where you can like print out notes with the receipt. So my practice had that. And so I would always take this tiny, just two or three sentences about what I said. I'm worried about your pet having allergies. We discuss a food trial. We discuss long-term therapy, things like that. And just putting it in the record so that they have something to refer to, I think speeds you up and makes the whole process easier. And the clients who come back for recheck are going to be the most successful. That's just how it works. So give them most of your energy.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a really good idea. I never thought about having like a running doc that I can just pull from. That would make life so much easier. What have I been doing all this time?
It's so nice. I am no longer in the days where I'm spending 2 hours at the clinic finishing records because little tricks like that really help me out.
That would honestly would have made my day so much faster today. Oh, gosh. Well, I feel like we have covered this topic pretty well. And honestly, I mean, if people are wondering, like, what are the kind of cases that I'm going to see if I start out in GP, like this, exactly this was probably one of the cases that I saw within my first couple weeks of practice. And I remember just being so flustered trying to be like, itchy, itch scratch cycle, treatments, what do we do? Long-term diet. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I got off the phone and I was like, that was terrible. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that. I probably confused myself, probably confused the client. They were still very nice about it. But I think in the future for like new grads coming into it, having the time to sit down and think, okay, if this is the kind of basic case I'm going to see, what are the main topics that I want to cover? Like what are the, even just writing it out would have helped me a ton. So I think going through this was very helpful for myself also. So hopefully it was helpful for the vet students as well. So thank you so, so much for taking the time to chat about this. Have a good laugh about crazy clients and different challenges. It's kind of nice to hear that the problems that like I face in GP, you're also like you're familiar with it because you've experienced it, but you also still face them within referral practice, which is kind of nice.
100%.
It's kind of nice. We're on the same page there. And of course, you're seeing the clients after they've already seen me and we've done the first kind of basic steps of this and you get to take the referral step. So for people who are interested in potentially pursuing either an internship or a residency in dermatology, would you recommend that they reach out to you or what kind of resources would you point them to?
Yeah, I would say you're more than welcome to DM me on Instagram. I'm happy to chat with anybody who's interested or, is just curious. I think the things that helped me the most, it'll definitely depend on the world getting a little bit, if we can be within 6 feet of each other again one day.
Maybe one day.
But I highly encourage calling your local dermatologist. I reached out to my derm professor from school, and she helped me a lot. Going to the derm conference, it's called NAVDF, the National American Veterinary Derm Forum, every year. Attending that helped me get my foot in the door for this job. So, reaching out to whoever you know, always helpful, and networking, going to virtual conferences, just do it. Try to see if there are people who are willing to connect you with other people. You never know who knows who. Our profession is so small. We'll find each other. But I have to confess, I actually listened to, I think it was Dr. John Arnold from, I think you did that podcast years ago, and I love his podcast too. And I just couldn't help but thinking, I was like, yeah, same thing. Like the world in vet med is so small, like everybody's connected some way. So make those connections, network. And when the world opens up a little bit more, see if you can spend a day with a dermatologist.
Those are awesome ideas. And again, if any of you students out there or new grads want to pursue it, like go reach out to Jeff. He'll point you in the right direction. There's a lot of awesome people out in the profession that you can connect with. But otherwise, for today, thank you guys for coming along to another episode of Skillset. I'm excited to be doing these episodes again. But otherwise, if you're looking for more information on the podcast, you can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. I now have a website. It's taken me 3 years to get there, but I have a website that you can listen to the podcast. You can put recommendations on through there. And as always, you guys can also reach out to Jeff at DermDoctorJeff on Instagram. But otherwise, I think we'll wrap it up there and say, all right, y'all, see you till next time. Bye.
Thank you.